Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, America's favorite right-wing conservative talk podcast. I'm glad to be back with you, glad to have you back on the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. As night falls here in the Rocky Mountain West, we join you already in progress. And no, we are not going to talk about the White House Correspondents' Dinner. We'll leave that to more juvenile talk show hosts. We're not going to talk about the coronation of Mitt Romney, and how can he craft a strategy that will bring moderates along and not alienate his conservative base? We'll leave that to others, because we just don't care. We really just don't care anymore about all of that. I mean, news, CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, all these cable news, TV networks, and even the network news now, it's as useless as ESPN. Frankly, you can't watch that anymore either. Have no interest in any of it. Really winnowing down our entertainment choices here around the McBurney compound. In fact, it got so bad earlier in the week, I woke up early one morning, and I watched Joel Osteen preaching for the first time. I'd never watched Mr. Osteen preach before. And I had no idea that he was a complete huckster. I thought he was just a feel-good, seeker-friendly, never-mention-sin type of... But he's not. He's into this plant-a-seed ministry. Yeah, Joel Osteen, he's a total shucking and jiving huckster is what he is. I had no idea. I mean, I knew we disagree. I mean, if you've seen my YouTube video where I criticize Mr. Osteen for saying a prayer consecrating Houston's homosexual lesbian freak mayor back a couple of years ago. You know that I'm no friend of Joel Osteen, but I had never actually heard the man preach. And I heard him the other morning. It's not enough to simply trust in the Lord. Let's move on to step two. Go out and be good to someone. Meaning, of course, be good to Joel Osteen Ministries Incorporated, LLC. Plant a seed. Be good to somebody. It's not enough to simply trust in the Lord, Mr. Osteen. I believe there's a scripture, and I could be wrong, but I believe there's a scripture that contradicts Mr. Osteen. I'd have to open up my Bible and take a look here. And I'm opening it up as we speak, because I'm thinking I can find that verse. I think it is enough to simply trust in the Lord, Mr. Osteen. And in fact, I think that's in the Bible. You know, in fact, I think there are several examples, but... You know, we could just go to Romans, the 10th chapter. For with the heart one believes unto righteousness. Oh, warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would like to silence anyone who would ever dare even consider the possibility of quoting a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered, Mr. Osteen. And all of you others. I don't know how Joel feels about quoting the Bible in church, but I never did see him quote the Bible in his sermon the other morning. Anyway, Romans, the 10th chapter. For with the heart one believes unto righteousness. One believes unto righteousness. And with the mouth confession is made unto salvation. So it doesn't talk. You know, where does it say to plant a seed or to write a check? I don't see that. But I'm no biblical scholar like Joel Osteen. Anyways... I don't want to get distracted early on, but, his prayer was, come into my heart, I make you my Lord and Savior. Joel, you can't make him Lord, I can't make him Lord. He's already the Lord, he's already the Savior. Now, you or I can trust him for those things, to be our Lord and Savior, but we can't make him any of that. He made himself that, Joel. We need to trust him, and we don't need to write you a check or plant a seed in your collection plate. Anyway, so I'm declaring myself a sworn enemy of Joel Osteen as of today. Yeah, He's coming to Denver, by the way, Friday, June 1st. He'll be at the Pepsi Center, where I'm sure he'll sell it out, and there will be a lot of seed planting in the collection plate.
Hey, we should have gone to the petition.
Well, we will be. We will be outside planting seeds at the Pepsi Center. We'll be petitioning for the Colorado Personhood Initiative. Did I mention that the YouTube video was over 93,000 views?
No.
A lot of good comments, too. A lot of good debate on theology and whatnot. Anyway, a good time was had by all. And we'll see Joel Osteen on Judgment Day. I have a hard time saying his name.
Yeah.
Joel. I want to say Joel Osteen. Anyway, Joel Osteen. Anyway, didn't realize that he was in the Mike Murdoch huckster mold, but in fact he is. And so we're sworn enemies from here until Judgment Day, or until he gets his act together. All right. Let's move on, though. Starting the politics file. Should we really do this? All right, we're going to do it. This is from NBC in New York. New Zealand's health ministry has reportedly considered boosting the price of a pack of cigarettes up to as high as $100 in a bid to make the country smoke-free by the year 2025. Yeah, they've got big plans there in New Zealand. Cigarettes right now down in New Zealand are priced at $16 to $17. And the prime minister says $100 seems, quote, like an awful lot, unquote. It seems like an awful lot. And he's concerned that it could encourage a black market. Imagine that. Anyway, just a little background on New Zealand and the culture there. Abortion in New Zealand is legal and government subsidized. If you can't afford an abortion, the government will help you pay the bill. Euthanasia is illegal, but a recent survey says 85% of the people support euthanasia, and 75% in the same survey, citizens of New Zealand reported that they would help a loved one kill themselves. Let's see. Homosexuality has been decriminalized for men and boys 16 years and older since 1986. Civil unions are recognized by the government. And let's see here. The top tax rate. I always look at abortion, euthanasia, homosexuality, and theft when I'm considering a culture. Theft by oppressive taxation is the subheading. The top income tax rate, 33%. The top corporate tax rate, 33%. And they have a national sales tax of 15%. So they fail on virtually every level. Now, they have not outright legalized homosexual marriage, but the civil unions, they say there, give homosexual, deviant, perverted couples the same rights as normal people. So they failed on... But they're going to go for the smoke-free thing. So the kids growing up in New Zealand, obviously they're going to be tolerant of all kinds of wicked and dangerous lifestyles and open to all kinds of deviant worldviews, but they may be smoke-free, unless, of course, they buy those smokes on the black market. Anyway, so there you have New Zealand, gone to hell in a handbasket. All right, now speaking of hell in a handbasket, let's talk about the public schools. Here in the United States, we'll go to Cherry Hill, New Jersey, from Fox Television in Philadelphia. Cherry Hill, New Jersey, a New Jersey father says he was so desperate to save his autistic son from the bullying of teachers that he sent him to school with a hidden tape recorder. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, a tape recorder? Does anybody use tape recorders anymore? That caught my eye. But there's a lot more disturbing things going on in the story. This father says that his 10-year-old son, he says he caught his son's teachers gossiping, talking about alcohol, and violently yelling at students. Yeah, he sent his son in undercover into the public school, his autistic son, 10 years old, to spy on his teachers because there had been reports. Well, they had told him that he was hitting teachers, and the father knew something was wrong because his son was generally a peaceful young lad. So he sends him in, catches the teacher talking about boozing it up, yelling at students. The father says he hopes the video leads to legislative action for zero tolerance for this type of behavior from educators. Meanwhile, his son, 10-year-old autistic victim, is, quote, in a new school environment, unquote. And reportedly, he's doing really well.
So,
is this what it takes, ladies and gentlemen, for someone to realize? And this guy doesn't even realize that he should get his kid out of the public schools. He thinks he needs to send him as an undercover agent, and he's hoping for legislative action. How about some fatherly action, like getting your child out of the hellhole where he's being tortured? And if he's in a new public school environment, I can assure you he's not doing really well, Dad. And neither are you. Frankly, this father needs a good whipping, or at least some discipline. Maybe whipping is... You think that's too much?
Well, he needs to wake up.
He needs to wake up. And a good whipping can wake you up. Anyway, Dad, get your kid out of the school. He's not an undercover agent. He's not 007.
He's a single dad.
Oh, maybe he's a single dad?
Yeah, maybe. He is.
He is. Oh, you've followed up on this story. Mm-hmm. You know a little bit. Oh, he's a single father.
Yeah, and then...
Well, that's unfortunate.
And then they called him bastard.
They called the child a bastard?
And
oh.
So he's very upset.
And they made... Oh, okay. Well, I mean, how much does it take, Dad? I mean, figure out a way. I mean, someone should encourage this man to look for a good woman to raise his child. But that's so politically incorrect to say that.
But
if we suggested that the dad look for a boyfriend to raise his, would that be politically incorrect? All right, we're not going to go there. We'll leave that story aside. Folks, if you're sending your children to the public schools in America, you're sinning against God and you're sinning against your child, and you need to repent. For the sake of your child... And for the sake of your own sanity, please. I mean, how much does it... Your child's being bullied by teachers, for crying out loud. It's unbelievable what parents will tolerate. And what is the benefit? I tell you, we've been homeschooling for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. And I cannot imagine the alternative. I can't imagine doing it any other way. Is it easy? I'll ask my extremely attractive audio engineer. Is it easy? She says, no, it's not necessarily easy.
But it's not that hard.
But we just simply cannot imagine doing anything differently. All right, let's go. One more from the public schools out of the culture file. This is from Fox News. Fox News Radio reports that as many as 100 high school students walked out of a national journalism conference after an anti-bullying speaker began cursing, attacked the Bible, and reportedly called those who refused to listen to his rant, well, I can't say what he called them because it's a curse. We don't curse on this show, generally. I know I said bastard earlier, but I said that in the biblical sense. When I call someone a bastard, what I'm saying is you really don't know who your father is. And it's a spiritual chastisement. But this guy was, well, I can't say what he called them pansies, And he cursed at them. Now, the speaker was a gentleman named Don Savage, and I use the term gentleman loosely. He's the founder of the It Gets Better Project, an anti-bullying campaign that has reached more than 40 million viewers, with contributors ranging from President Barry Ho and a number of Hollywood stars who will not be mentioned here.
Thank you.
Yeah. Savage and his husband... were guests at the White House for President Obama's 2011 Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, Deviant, Freak of Nature Pride Month reception. And he was also invited to a White House anti-bullying conference where he no doubt found the cruising quite satisfactory. Him and his husband. Anyway, the journalism advisor for Sutter Union High School in California was among the people in the audience. And he said that they thought the speech was going to be one thing, anti-bullying. So this proves he's a moron. Anti-bullying is a code word for the promotion of homosexual deviancy amongst the youth. And if you don't realize that, Mr. Journalism Advisor, you should like take a course on plumbing and get a real job. Just embarrassing. Anyway, he says the speech was laced with vulgarities and sexual innuendo not appropriate for this age group. That's what this is a teacher, journalism advisor there at Sutter Union High School. He said there was sexual innuendo not appropriate for this age group. I find sexual innuendo generally not appropriate, period. Anyway, at one point, this journalism advisor said Savage told the teenagers about how good his partner looked. Well, I can't say that. I can't even repeat what this guy said. The conservative website CitizenLink was the first to report about the controversy. They interviewed some of the kids, and they all said relatively vacuous, stupid things because they're products of they're victims of the public education system. Anyway, so a bunch of people walked out on this rabid homosexual promoter, and Savage did offer an apology, although some people found it sarcastic. He said, "I'm sorry if I hurt anyone's feelings, but I have a right to defend myself and to point out the hypocrisy of people who justify anti-gay bigotry by pointing to the Bible and insisting that we must live by the code of Leviticus on this one issue and no other." And you know what, folks? This deviant pervert actually has a point with his sarcastic apology, because so many Christian leaders, so many Christians, so many of our pastors and seminary educators have no idea why it is we can point to certain portions of Leviticus and insist that, yes, those still apply, and point to others and insist, no, they don't. And then we can actually prove that point biblically. Most of them are just thoroughly confused, and they don't even know why they're supposed to be against homosexuality. They just know that they're supposed to because that's what they were taught in seminary, or at least that's what some of them were taught in seminary. Fewer and fewer these days, from what I understand. Blow Up the Outside World. For those of you who can't figure out the lyrics, I understand. We're implying that seminary may do better if it were simply... well, many seminaries need to be rhetorically blown up. Certainly not anything physical. But, no, I like the implication. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, well, you have to let people know, or, you know, Secret Service will be at your door.
Okay.
Yeah, so anyway, Chris Cornell didn't mean, although I think he probably would want to blow up a seminary. Anyway, all right, let's move on to something that we can all understand a little bit better, I think, and that's the war file. Story from Reuters. This is just another devastating blow to the war effort there in Afghanistan. A soldier opened fire at an American military base last Wednesday in Kandahar province. An Afghan Special Forces soldier opened fire and killed an American Special Forces member and his translator. Wow. Reuters reports that at least 18 foreign soldiers have died this year in 11 incidents of so-called green-on-blue shootings, which are an increasing worry for both NATO and Afghan commanders, eroding trust as Western combat troops look to leave the country in 2014. Can you imagine these guys sitting over there in Afghanistan? They have got to be counting the days when they can get out of Afghanistan alive. And if you look back to another conflict, Vietnam, when the decision was made to cut and run, and men were simply counting down the days, just hoping to survive, well, that's a recipe for losing a war. So we're going to lose this war. It hurts to say that. I'm sad to say that. But we're going to lose this war. Reuters reports the latest shooting involved a member of Afghanistan's new special forces who allegedly undergo rigorous vetting as part of their selection into the country's top anti-insurgency force. So this is one of the Afghan soldiers whom we vetted and checked his background and made sure that he was one of us, or at least could relate to us, or at least wouldn't shoot us in our beds as we slept. And, well, he shot one of our guys. Terrible. A spokesman for the Afghan Taliban has claimed responsibility for the attack, but we don't know if that's actually true, but, well, listen to this. NATO commanders argue that the growing number of green-on-blue shootings is actually in proportion to the growing size of the Afghan security forces toward their eventual target of 352,000. So we're building them an army. So NATO says, well, look, the force is getting bigger, and so, yeah, some of our guys are getting shot by people they train, but, you know, it's all proportional. It's like this, I had this heathen friend, we were talking about the murder rate in Denver, and he said, well, you know, there's like 2 million people, you got to expect that, you know, and I said, no, you actually don't have to expect that, and we shouldn't tolerate it. And for NATO to say that, well, you know, it's all proportional, you know, you got to look at the glass half full, you know. Meanwhile, every single one of the men on the ground, our men on the ground, and coalition forces on the ground, are looking over their shoulder at their Afghan comrades with fear and trepidation, and they're just praying they don't get shot in the back, and they hope they get home to their Corvette and their girlfriend. So we're going to build their army up to 352,000. Well, their security forces, whatever that means. So we're building them an army, but we have yet to build a single Christian church in Afghanistan. And ladies and gentlemen, that's a recipe for losing not only a war, but a civilizational clash. Things are not looking good because we've taken our eye off the ball. And we don't realize that without acknowledging our religious heritage, and decisively seeking to impose that superior religious heritage upon these poor, filthy, unwashed heathens, we've lost the credibility needed to win this clash of civilizations. We haven't lost it. We've actually abandoned it. We've discarded it. Christianity is no better than Islam, is no better than Buddhism, is no better than Hinduism, is no better than shamanism, is no better than Satanism. They're all just religions. No better than Mormonism. We could even have a Mormon president, right? No, that's not going to happen. No, we'll keep the secular humanist in there. So we're going to build them an army, but not a single church. Well played, Mr. Bush. Obviously, not a military or not a historian, not even an educated man. Quite possibly the stupidest man to ever occupy the White House, George W. Bush. Well played, Mr. Bush, as our men are in fear for their lives, with rules of engagement that make them sitting targets for the Taliban infiltrators. Scary stuff. Okay, now you're upset at me because I said Christianity is superior and that we should assertively impose Christianity. And all I mean by impose it, folks, is to build churches and send ministers there. I don't want to kill anyone if they don't want to come to church. I would just like to give them an option. And in Afghanistan, to build a Christian church, trust me, it's quite an imposition. All right. Now let me try to prove my point that Christianity is inherently superior to Islam. This is from the Weekly Standard. According to various news agencies, Mr. Muhammad Abu Shahala, a former intelligence agent for the Palestinian Authority, has been sentenced to death. Yes, following a very brief trial. What is his crime, you ask? Selling property to Jews in Hebron. That's right, he sold a house to some Jews, and he's been sentenced to death. Yeah. The death sentence can be executed only following concurrence by the head of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, president of the Palestinian. So the president has to actually sign off on it. David Wilder and Noam Arnon of the Jewish community in Hebron have written a letter addressed to Ban Ki-moon, Hillary Clinton, Benjamin Netanyahu, and other high-ranking officials pleading the case of Mr. Shahala, saying we don't think he should be sentenced to death for selling his house. But a death sentence has been handed down by the followers of Allah. Yeah. The letter from the members of the Jewish community there in Hebron notes the similarity between this law and Nazi-era Nuremberg laws. You remember, you couldn't buy or sell to or from the Jews in a vast swath of Eastern and Western Europe during the World War II era because of the Nuremberg laws. The authors ask in their letter, quote, "Is the Palestinian Authority a reincarnation of the Third Reich?" Unquote. Duh. It's fairly obvious. But I don't think Ban Ki-moon or Hillary Clinton or, well, maybe Benjamin Netanyahu understands. But Ban Ki-moon and Hillary Clinton, certainly not. Christianity, Islam, Nazism, Satanism, it's all just religion. And who's got time for that? It causes so many problems. Now, this is from the Weekly Standard article, according to columnist Caroline Glick, this law against selling property to Jews has been a part of the Palestinian, has long been a part of the Palestinian Authority. She says the PA was established in May of 1994. The very first law it adopted defined selling land to Jews as a capital offense. Shortly thereafter, scores of Arab land sellers began turning up dead in Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria in both judicial and extrajudicial killings. So that is the heart of Islam, and it beats in sync with the heart of Nazism. To this day, not surprisingly, because the Islamists and the Muslims were very, very good friends of Adolf Hitler. And they are, I don't know if they're a reincarnation or they're just the existential remnant of Nazism, but they are an existential threat, at least to Mr. Shahala, who sold his house to a Jew and now quite possibly faces a death sentence. But wait, you say, that's really the government. That's not necessarily the church, although anyone who studied the area knows that the Muslim church is intertwined with the Islamic government in the PA and many other Middle Eastern Muslim countries. But let's talk about what the Muslim church advocates. We'll go to the Daily Mail from London, and I'm not sure I can read this. I have to figure out how to read the story without being vulgar or disgusting. According to the Daily Mail in London, a new measure is being introduced by the Islamist-dominated parliament in Egypt, and the law would legally allow men to have relations with their dead wives for up to 6 hours after their death. Yeah. The minimum age of marriage will be lowered to 14, and women would also lose the rights of getting an education and employment. And their husbands can have relations with them for 6 hours after they're dead. Now, in 2011, a Moroccan cleric, Muslim type, said marriage remains valid even after death, and that the husband should be able to, what I just said. But now, he also said that women have the same right. Okay. Now, for you Muslim friends of mine out there, if you're involved in a religion that advocates that women should lose their rights to get an education, no right to employment, that the marriage age should be lowered to 14, and that their husbands can, you've got to just sit down and perhaps at least question the foundations of your faith. Because perhaps you're not worshiping God. Perhaps you're not worshiping the one true creator God. Perhaps you're worshiping the devil. Yeah, I think Islam at its base is satanic. And this is This is exhibit number 337,412, that Islam is, in fact, a satanic religion that it stands in stark contrast and violent opposition to the true religion of peace, which is the religion of the living God, the Creator, who, by the way, in the Bible, the living God, Yahweh, Jehovah, authorized women to own land at a time when women were considered property in the Middle East. And so I just suggest that you look at the foundations of both and try to make an educated decision. But of course, the people in the Middle East live in fear for their lives to convert from Islam. And that's because we in the West have lost our nerve and we've left these poor people to be savaged by a corrupt religious political leadership hell-bent on violence and destruction. All right, now I got another one from the War File here before we take a break. This is from CNN. Where do I want to start? Judicial Watch, a conservative legal group, has asked the Department of Defense to comply with a Freedom of Information request for video and photographs of the dead al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden, and a judge has shot that down. Judge has said, no, we're not going to release the video and photographs of Osama bin Laden lying dead. Judge James Boasberg ruled last Thursday that there were legitimate national security interests to deny disclosure, and so they're not going to release the pictures. So just juxtapose this in your mind for one moment with the fact that newspapers right here, I believe it was the Los Angeles Times, recently printed images of our soldiers and Marines that could put their security in danger. Yeah, you remember a bomber came to blow up some Marines and some soldiers, and they ended up blowing themselves up. And these young Marines and young soldiers posed with portions of their bodies, apparently. And the LA Times, over the protestations of the Defense Department, the State Department, the Barry Ho administration, they protested, said, don't publish these pictures. The LA Times did it, endangering the security, not just a vague concept of national security, but directly putting in danger our Marines and soldiers, and the Obama administration, our government, our justice system does nothing. But they would not. The same government, this federal judge, would not release the photos of Osama bin Laden for some national defense security / we don't want to cause any problems. Anyway, I don't know that it was wise for the Marines to pose with the dead bodies. I didn't actually see the pictures. I don't have time for it. Like I say, the news is pretty much useless anymore. I read the stories. But I don't know that it was necessarily such a horrible thing. I mean, I seem to remember a story in the Bible where a young man went into battle against a giant soldier. And everyone figured that this young man would be butchered by this soldier. And the young man's name was David, and he hit Goliath in the forehead with a stone, and Goliath fell over. And I've read through the text, and it's a little unclear as to whether or not Goliath was actually dead when he hit him in the head or afterwards, because David took Goliath's sword and chopped his head off and took his head home with him and showed it to everybody. In fact, he brought it into the court of the king, walked in there with Goliath's head. Talk about a trophy. And I read the text, and I read the entire story of David, and I don't ever recall anyone, a priest, a prophet, or God himself getting upset with David for taking the head of Goliath.
Naked.
that's the only part of that song I can understand. They're marching to Bastille Day. The guillotine will claim a bloody price, and then nobody can figure out anything that that guy's saying. Anyway, and I want to, the reason my extremely attractive audio engineer brought that tune in is because she knows how I feel about democracy, and she knows what democracy produced in the French Revolution back in the late 1700s. And it's the worship of democracy that that I think is at the heart of why we have abandoned the moral capital that our forefathers built over the course of the past four centuries. And I want to give you an example of that right now. Again, from the Weekly Standard. They're bringing it this week, apparently. They report that in the wake of the Arab Spring, the Obama administration is grappling with how to handle Islamists. Radical adherence to Islam. See, that now, you boys at the Weekly Standard, that's not necessarily what an Islamist is. They're not necessarily radical adherence to Islam. They're Muslims who believe that the Muslim church should run the government and rule the world. And that's not necessarily a radical thing to a Muslim. It's kind of part of the whole deal. Anyway, let's get back to the article. Barry Ho and his people are struggling with how, now with the Arab Spring in the air, the Ho administration is particularly struggling because the issue has come to the fore in regards to Egypt, which, according to the Weekly Standard, is now certain to elect an Islamist government. And many Islamist leaders, the next time the Egyptians go to the polls in their democratic election. Yeah. In fact, a senior official in the State Department told the National Journal last week, quote, the war on terror is over. Yeah, it's over. He said, now that we have killed most of Al-Qaeda, now that people have come to see legitimate means of expression, people who once might have gone into Al-Qaeda see an opportunity for legitimate Islamism. That was the word used by a State Department official. Legitimate Islamism. Well, here's the problem. If you worship democracy, you have no argument against popularly elected Islamists. Even if they want the Muslim church to kill or convert the Jews or Christians and dominate the globe with a global caliphate. Well, if that's what the people want. So the government schools, ladies and gentlemen, in our country for the past 100 years or so, have taught the children that democracy is paramount and that truth is relative. And I know because I went to the public schools. I was victimized myself. I managed to recover. But for generation after generation, we've been taught that democracy is the ideal. Democracy is superior to religion. And truth is relative anyways. Maybe the Muslims are right. And who are we to judge? And so now our government acknowledges legitimate Islamism, which will cut your head off just as fast as, well, maybe not as fast, but just as surely as terroristic Islamism. Because the heart of Islam beats in sync with the heart of Nazism. As I said before, now I'm repeating myself, so I'll have to move on. I'll move on to the domestic tranquility file. And this could have come from the war file. Nathan Taylor is according to CBS News in Los Angeles. Nathan Taylor was sitting alone in his car, cell phone in hand, when he was shot by an unknown assailant. He had just left a party because he didn't like to be around a bunch of drinking. He called his brother on his cell phone. He said, you know, this party, everyone's getting drunk and loud. I'm out of here. So he went and sat in his car. Several men walked up to the car, and one of the suspects fired several rounds into the vehicle, police said in a statement. The victim was fatally shot in the upper torso. After hearing the shots, his brother ran outside and found his brother bleeding to death and slumped over the steering wheel. This is in Lancaster, California. And Nathan Taylor was a 30-year-old veteran of the armed forces who served three tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he was shot to death last Saturday in Lancaster, California, sitting in his car. I don't know what else to say. It's awful. It's horrible. And I cannot believe that we as a civilized society are willing to tolerate the levels of violence and bloodshed that are occurring in our from our major metropolitan areas down to the smallest town. How much longer are we going to allow the lawyers and the judges who make their living off this violence and bloodshed, how much longer are we going to allow them to tell us that we must tolerate this when our soldiers are in more danger in Lancaster, California, sitting in their car after midnight than three tours in Iraq and Afghanistan? How much longer are we going to sit? I want to ask you, listener, is it going to be one of your children has to be killed before you stand up and say, we cannot tolerate this anymore? Is it going to be your wife who's raped? Is it going to be your mother who's robbed and beaten? Is it going to be your son who's shot, caught in a crossfire? Because if we keep tolerating it, ladies and gentlemen, it's just a numbers game. It eventually is going to touch every one of us. In fact, it should already be touching every one of us. That's why I say, I mentioned that we homeschool our children, and I know a lot of other parents in my circle of friends who homeschool their children, and I've said that we cannot rely on the political leadership and the religious leadership that we have right now. We have to build our own. And I thank God that in America we're still free to a degree that we can do that. We are building our own. And our children will rule over their children if we survive and we're not all on a prayer rug by the time I'm a grandfather, for crying out loud. All right. So let's go to the justice file, because I've touched on the inanity and the bizarre nature of justice here in America, where we're expected to tolerate violence. Well, listen to this from Naples, Florida, from WTSP. Authorities say a Naples man remains jailed on felony charges after leaving a McDonald's restaurant without paying for a cup of soda. This man came to the counter at McDonald's there in Naples, and he asked for a cup of water, which he was given free of charge. He then filled it with soda from the soda fountain. Well, the manager asked him to pay a dollar for the soda. The man refused and would not leave the premises, so the manager called the police. So the man was charged with petty theft, but because he has previous petty theft convictions, that charge was increased to a felony, and this man could be incarcerated for up to 5 years for walking out of McDonald's without paying for a soda pop. I know there are many conservatives who worked for many years to pass the three strikes laws, and these minimum mandatory sentencing laws for repeat offenders. What you people don't realize is that you're not actually conservative. You are suckers, being suckered by the judges and the lawyers who make a big living processing people like this guy in and out of prison. You're all suckers and fools. If you were truly conservative, you would have advocated that this thief, the last time he stole something, he should have been punished appropriately. He should have had to repay the debt. He shouldn't be locked up like a dog. He shouldn't be locked up for 5 years for stealing a soda pop. Our justice system is criminally insane, and we're all in danger because of it. And it's the heart of the problem, believe it or not, I think, of Islam. The fact that we no longer know right from wrong means that we've created a spiritual and political vacuum. and nature abhors a vacuum. And if Christianity will not rule, if Christianity has become vacuous and justice has become lost, then Islam naturally will come in and fill that vacuum. View, and I'm Doug McBurney. We are rounding third and headed to home, and we're running out of time, as is always the case every week. And I want to move into the religion file. I think I already have. There's a story from the Houston Chronicle that caught my eye because I remember this story. Andrea Yates was convicted of murdering her five children. You remember? You remember, right? She took each child, drowned them in the family bathtub. She's still alive. She is in prison. She was convicted initially, but the conviction was overturned. She was found insane and sentenced to a mental institution. According to the Houston Chronicle, she may soon be allowed outside of the confines of the state psychiatric hospital to go to church. Yeah, Yates' doctors will file a letter this week asking to let Yates leave for 2 hours a week to attend church services. Yates' attorney believes she has been ready for years to rejoin society, including getting a job and living on her own. Now, he's not helping. What Andrea Yates needs to realize is that she has committed a crime so heinous that she deserves death. And until she realizes she deserves death, insane or not, I don't care if she was insane or on drugs or possessed by a demon, I don't care any of that. She needs to be confronted with the truth and the reality of what she's done, and she needs to realize in her own heart that she deserves death. So these people are not helping her. And unless she goes to a church where they tell her, where they at least ask her, do you understand that you should have been killed for what you did? Do you accept responsibility? That's not going to help. So the lawyers aren't helping her. The interesting thing, though, here is that Andrea Yates can be saved. She can be. It's overwhelming to consider that a woman who did what Andrea Yates did has not committed a sin so great that the blood of Jesus Christ cannot cover it. What an awesome, incredible God. You compare what Jesus Christ is willing to do for even the worst of sinners, the people who hate him, the people who kill his children. You compare that with the surahs of the Quran. And I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, it's not even a contest. Andrea Yates can be saved, but not by Allah, and not by a justice system who tells her that she's ready to join society, get a job, go to church. But she can be saved if she comes face to face with her Creator and confesses and repents and says, I'm sorry, sincerely from her heart, Andrea Yates can be saved by my God. All right. We'll go to the politics file, a little lighter fare, ladies and gentlemen. This is from the Daily Caller. Under pressure from farming advocates in rural communities, the Barry Ho administration withdrew a proposed rule last week that would have applied child labor laws to family farms. Now, the Daily Caller reports that the rule would have dramatically changed what types of chores children under the age of 16 could perform on and around American farms. It would have prohibited them from working with tobacco, operating almost all types of power-driven equipment, and being employed to work with any raw farm materials.
What's that?
Oh, they couldn't shovel the manure out of the, you know.
Why not?
Because that's raw farm material. They couldn't pick the crops.
Why not?
They couldn't slaughter the pigs. Because Barry Ho is a secular humanist who doesn't understand how our country was built. And if he does understand it, he hates it and he wants to destroy it. Let's see. Prohibited places of employment would have included country grain elevators, grain bins, silos, feedlots, stockyards, livestock exchanges, and livestock auctions.
Ooh, evil.
I mean, if you go back and you look at the resume of half the presidents of the United States before 1950, I can assure you every one of them did one of those things. If you look at every great general, every great political leader, every preacher who was worth his salt, they all did stuff like this. And the Ho administration reflexively, not with malice aforethought, this is simply who they are. And they didn't realize that they would upset everyone with this. And so they've rescinded the rule. And they say that it will not be pursued for the duration of the Obama administration, implying that this is really what we still want, but, you know, okay, we didn't realize everyone was going to get so upset. Anyway, now into the personhood file from the Weekly Standard. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops has taken a bold stand for religious freedom. In a recent statement titled "Our First Most Cherished Liberty," the Catholic bishops call for a repeal of contraception coverage mandated by the Department of Health and Human Services. The clarified position sets up a dramatic confrontation with the Obama administration. Boy, those Catholic bishops are so brave. Actually, I'm glad they're awake. I'm glad someone shook the bishops awake. Perhaps maybe now we can get their attention. Back to the Weekly Standard article. The HHS mandate requires employers to provide insurance coverage for contraception and sterilization services, and they don't list abortifacients. And you know, the Weekly Standard is supposed to be a conservative magazine. They're afraid to say that HHS wants the Catholics to provide abortion pills that kill embryos. And they won't say it. It really annoys me. It's what leads me to say, you know what, you people? You're not really conservative. You're suckers and you're fools. You're playing inside the vernacular of the enemy. They've corrupted you. You've become altogether unprofitable. I mean, you people are lucky I'm here to translate these, you know, because you people might think that this is a conservative magazine. But they're afraid to mention the abortion pills. Anyway, back to the article. It is, according to the bishops, this mandate is an unjust law. They write, here's what the Catholic bishops wrote. It cannot be obeyed. This HHS mandate. It cannot be obeyed. Therefore, one does not seek relief from it, but rather its repeal. And, you know, this might help the Catholic bishops wake up and realize that it's their fault. They, along with the Baptists and the Methodists and the Lutherans and the Episcopalians and the Presbyterians, all you religious leaders, maybe they'll wake up and they'll realize that it's their fault that for 40 years, we've allowed the legal butchering of innocent babies. Maybe the Catholic bishops will wake up, and this might help them see personhood. Because right now, the Catholic bishops are against the efforts of patriotic Americans to restore the God-given personhood, the right to life of every innocent human being. The Catholic bishops are against it. But perhaps now they'll realize. Let's see. Is there anything more? Oh, the statement from the bishop sets up a dramatic showdown between the leaders of the Catholic Church and the Barry Ho administration, a confrontation that may not be good for either side. It is hard to see what middle ground exists, or even if it does, says the Weekly Standard, a supposedly conservative magazine. They say it's hard to see what middle ground exists. Well, let me clue you in. There is no middle ground between those who want to kill people and those who want to defend the innocent. There is no middle ground. And all you religious leaders I just mentioned, you've been suckers and fools. You've been somehow taught that you could operate and find middle ground with people who will eventually imprison you and kill you. Yes, it's not just the Islamists, ladies and gentlemen. It's the secular humanists, the people in the Barry Ho administration eventually will imprison and kill anyone who would dare quote a Bible verse in public, to quote Bob Inyar. Oh, I don't know if he ever said they would kill them, but I guess I'd have to clear that with him, but I'll work on that next week. One more from the person file as we rapidly run out of time. This is from BBC in Canada. 43 years ago in Canada, the so-called Omnibus Criminal Law Amendment Act, 1968-1969, was pushed through Parliament. The bill legalized contraception and abortion. That was 1968-69. Last week, possibly the most powerful pushback against the purveyors of the culture of death since the Supreme Court ruling in 1988 liberalized the abortion laws, and perhaps since 1969 when abortion was decriminalized, the most powerful pushback against the culture of death will take place at the Canadian Capitol. Parliamentarians will begin to debate the legal definition of when personhood begins in Canada. Conservative MP Stephen Woolworth's motion to debate the legal definition of a human person may do more for the pro-life cause than ever before, says the reporter from the BBC. Because recent scientific advancements offer irrefutable evidence, which shouldn't surprise anyone, that the baby growing in a woman's womb is not a clump of cells, but a viable life. In Canada, the BBC reports, as things stand right now, the BBC reports, in Canada, we adhere to a 400-year-old legal definition that a child is not a human person until it is born. They report abortion rights zealots claim a clump of cells has no rights, but recently an unexpected monkey wrench was cast into the behemoth of pro-abortion machinery, the problem of sex-selective abortion. We reported on this last week or a couple of weeks ago. This idea that the abortionists now are forced to advocate the killing of women if people are indeed free to have an abortion for any reason, which is what they advocate. This sex-selective abortion, again, exposing the House of Cards. Now in Canada, how exciting is this that we've got the personhood movement, the modern personhood movement, was only born here in the United States, reborn, I should say, in 2007. How long ago was that? 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 5 years. Only 5 years. And now in Canada, we quite possibly could have a debate on personhood on the floor of the Parliament. The reporter for BBC says, this will be abortionists' biggest challenge, this debate, in light of the problem of sex-selective abortion. This will be the abortionists' biggest challenge, and perhaps the undoing of the abortion myth that an unborn baby is a clump of cells, because the issue of sex-selective abortion focuses on the protection of an unborn baby and not on a mother's right to unrestricted abortion. This will likely come out as personhood is debated. Well, let's hope so. Let's hope. I find it hard to believe that anyone ever bought the line that it was just a clump of cells. To me, that sounds like willful ignorance, because they really wanted to get rid of that kid. And so they were willing to say whatever about a clump of cells. But who really believes that? Is anyone really that stupid? All right, we're almost out of time. I got a couple more stories here. I don't know if I want to do these. The EEOC has ruled that an employer who discriminates against an employee on the or an applicant on the basis of a person's gender identity is violating the prohibition on sex discrimination contained in Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. That opinion was issued on April 20th by the EEOC. the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. I just don't know what more I can say about that. I mean, surely we are swirling around the rim of hell. And here's another example from CNS News. First Lady Michelle Obama boasted at a campaign event in Omaha, Nebraska last Tuesday. She said, quote, "We made history," unquote, when the president's health care proposal was enacted and the administration issued a regulation mandating that insurance companies provide women with free contraceptives and abortifacient pills. I added the abortifacient pills because CNS News even is afraid to admit the truth. Barry Ho's MO claimed that insurance companies will now have to cover basic preventative care, things like prenatal care, mammograms, and contraception at no extra cost. We made history at no extra cost, says MO. I know that Michelle Obama is not an accountant, and she's certainly not an economist, but Michelle, there is going to be some extra cost, just so you know. There's going to be some extra cost to somebody, Michelle. And that's just in addition to the fact that you're killing innocent babies. Yeah, you're making history, all right. And believe me, God's writing all this down. Barry Ho and his MO, they're going to face all this. They did make history. There's no doubt about them. All right. Now let's... These last two stories. This is from New York. The controversial website Ashley Madison is offering $1 million bounty on Tim Tebow. They issued it via Twitter last week. A CNBC sports business reporter tweeted that Ashley Madison was offering $1 million for any woman who could prove that she slept with Tim Tebow. And the company retweeted the report brazenly. Ashley Madison provides matches for those seeking extramarital affairs. The company is described on its homepage as the most recognizable name in infidelity. Their founder, Noel Biederman, said in a statement, "If Mr. Tebow is indeed abstaining from adult relationships, I would encourage him to find a nice lady or two and enjoy his youth and fame as much as possible. He says, I guarantee no man of Tebow's stature could survive a season in New York without succumbing to the temptations of the city." How is this man not arrested? He has a website that promotes and facilitates adultery. Oh, I forgot. We've abandoned the morality of our forefathers. We've created a moral vacuum. And now you can profit from adultery and immorality. Brazenly, open in front of God and everybody in broad daylight. It's a wonder that the Islamists have not already landed on our shores. Anyway, the article also goes on to quote Rob Gronkowski of the New England Patriots, who claimed that he would rape Tim Tebow to take his virginity. That's a football player. He's a big, tough guy. He said that at an appearance at the University of Rhode Island, where he no doubt infected as many co-eds as possible with various venereal diseases, and maybe even boys too. I mean, that's Gronk. He's a big, tough guy. Now, he didn't say he'd rape Tebow. He said something else. I edited it. But I can assure you, Mr. Gronkowski, if you come up on Tim with that type of intention, you'd have to be intending to rape him, because he wouldn't go along with you or any Syphagana ringworm-infected slut that he might find in the back of your bus, you disgusting pig. And he'd probably kick... He probably would leave you injured. Let's just say that. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, finally, from New York Daily News, the spiritual diet that required a woman to stop eating or drinking and live off pure sunlight has had its effect. Yes, a Zurich newspaper reported last Wednesday that an unnamed Swiss woman in her 50s who decided to follow a radical fast in 2010, after viewing an Austrian documentary about an Indian guru who claims that he lives on nothing but sunshine for 70 years, she has died. And surprisingly, there's been several similar cases of self-starvation across Europe and Australia. So maybe people are stupid enough to believe it's a clump of cells. This lady believes she could live on sunshine and she died. When it comes to religion, the Bible says they will strain out a gnat and swallow a camel whole. And there you have it. All right, that's it. We're even. The music's over. Turn out the lights. The party's over. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be back with you next week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. By the way, I will be on the radio in Denver this week. Monday at least, maybe more, on AM 670, the 50,000-watt blowtorch of the Rocky Mountain West for the gospel. And you can tune in there and catch me. I also want to thank my friends at Denver Bible Church, Personage USA, American Right to Life, Colorado Right to Life, and Theology Online. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.